Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for March 12, 2013. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'll be speaking with Grégoire Altambonnet about a paper that appears in this week's issue of Science Signaling on how the inherent variability in the abundance of signaling proteins affects signal transduction. The outcomes of many, if not most, cell signaling events depend upon not just the presence or absence of proteins involved in signaling, but also upon the amounts of these proteins that are present in cells. The amount of any given protein may vary between genetically identical cells, even if those cells experience the same conditions. Differences in protein abundance between individual cells can affect how the cells respond to the same external cue, even when those cells are genetically identical and in an equivalent state of differentiation. In a study that appears in this issue of Science Signaling, a group led by Grégoire Altambonnet used a technique called cell-to-cell variability analysis to exploit this inherent variability in protein abundance to study the quantitative regulation of signal transduction. Altambonnet spoke to me from the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York City. Welcome, Dr. Altambonnet.
Thank you for giving us a chance to discuss our recent study.
How much does protein abundance vary between individual cells that are genetically identical and exposed to the same conditions?
It varies a lot, in fact. So first, I would like to point out that this is a very general problem in biology. Every time we do experiments, every time we try to prepare a pure population of individual cells, we are going to get some variability in the protein abundance, in the abundance of different proteins or receptors. So no matter how careful we are when we are preparing our cell cultures, we're always going to find some cells are proliferating better, some cells remain quiescent, and so on. That's not an artifact necessarily of the in vitro culture condition. We see the same when we take cells from an animal. So this problem of variability in protein abundance is very general. So if you go and you try to quantitate that, we find typically that maybe 15% of the cells will deviate from the median by more than twofold. And if you look at very specific receptors, very specific kinase or phosphatase, for example, in our case, in this study, we are focusing on the IL-2 or alpha chain, which is important for T cells and cytokine signaling. We find that maybe 10% of the population has the levels of IL-2 or alpha that deviates from the median by more than 20-fold. In either upregulation or downregulation. So I would say in general, it's very easy if you take a population of cells to find cells which express more than tenfold more or less than the median compared to the average cell.
How do those differences in protein abundance arise?
There are many different mechanisms. First, this has been studied very well in the context of simpler cells, maybe bacteria or yeast. And there you have some intrinsic noise in a gene transcription. The fact that you are dealing with one or two copies of a gene, you are trying to express mRNA or proteins from these very local sites, you have some very small number of molecules as a bottleneck. But when we look at mammalian cells, things get more complicated because there is a very complex network of transcription factors, of post-translational modification like microRNA or maybe some degradation of proteins. So there are many, many different mechanisms which are going to come into play, which are going to generate some variability in the protein abundance. And in a sense, we still don't have a complete theory to deal with this variability specifically in the case of mammalian cells, but for the purpose of this study, we are moving beyond that. What we are saying is that this is kind of a given. We are going to take these differences in protein abundance at face value. And what we are going to do is that we are going to leverage this variability to try to understand the function of proteins. So in a sense, we are going to take this variability of protein in abundance as kind of a given at the time of the experiment. And what we're trying to understand is what is going to imply functionally for the cells. We are going to try to understand how different the cells are going to be when they respond to stimuli.
What cell model and signaling system were you using in this study?
So in this study, we focused primarily on mouse T cells, so which were harvested from the lymphoid organs of mice. And I have to explain that this is a very specific case maybe, but it's particularly important functionally for the immune system. Because we know that this kind of variability in protein abundance is very critical to the way the immune response is being set up. So at the time when we get infected with a pathogen, let's say we get infected with a flu or with a cold virus, the immune response is going to get triggered by very few T cell clones. At the time, at the initiation of immune response, maybe 1, 10, or maybe 100 cells are going to respond. And yet, this very small population of T cells is really going to be able to generate many different type of immune response. Some T cells are going to start to fight by killing infected tissues. Some T cells are going to become more helper cells, secreting cytokines, making chemokines to recruit other cells. Some cells are going to proliferate, some cells are going to be quiescent, some cells are going to stay in the lymph node, some cells go to the tissue. So what I mean is that from a very limited pool of T cells, which is most likely genetically identical, you're going to be able to generate many different types of immune responses. What that means is that the variability that we see in the way this T cell responds is very important to be able to generate all these different immune responses, and that's why we really focused on T lymphocytes in this study.
And the signaling pathway in those cells that you were looking at?
So the signaling pathway what we focused on is mostly cytokine signaling. So again, in the context of T-cell differentiation, we know that as the cells get activated, they start secreting cytokines. So in our case, we are looking at the IL-2, interleukin-2, interleukin-7, interleukin-15, so all the interleukins of the common gamma chain receptors. And we know that these cytokines are very critical to drive differentiation. For example, IL-2 is going to be very good to push the cells to proliferate and to fight off apoptosis, while IL-7 and IL-15 are more important for homeostasis of T cells. So in terms of signaling, we can look at these cytokines, we can look at their response, which is a phosphorylation of STAT5, and try to see how the variability of the way these cells are wired gets mapped into variability and differentiation.
How do you measure the protein abundance of the proteins you're interested in these cells?
So we use very classical immunocytochemistry technique, flow cytometry. So we simply harvest the cells from the mice. We put them in culture or not, but we can do it directly ex vivo. And we are going to stain with specific antibodies and record their fluorescence by flow cytometry. So the important thing is that first we get single cell resolution because we are using flow cytometry. But also we have checked that this protocol, which consists again in staining protein of interest with antibody, is very accurate. We can really characterize protein abundance of a particular epitope with a very fine resolution, maybe on the order of 30%. So that means that we have very quantitative and very accurate measurement of a protein abundance inside these primary cells.
You can use flow cytometry to quantify a protein of interest in each individual T cell. And then what is the readout for signaling that you're assessing in each cell?
We measure, in our case, the phosphorylation of STAT5, which is a transcription factor, as a readout for the signaling cascade associated with cytokines in these cells. And again, the key aspect of our study is that not only we can measure phosphorylation of STAT5 as kind of a downstream element of a signaling cascade, but we can also measure the levels of IL-2R alpha, IL-2R beta, common gamma chain, and other components of the signaling pathway. So at the end of the day, we are going to get this kind of input-output map, which enables us to really dissect quantitatively how the signaling cascade is organized inside of these cells.
And so you measured the abundance of the cytokine receptors and then also measured the activation of downstream signaling components, downstream of those receptors for individual cells. What were the results of analyzing that data, of correlating the variability in receptor abundance with activation of the pathway?
So our main result came from a very serendipitous observation by Jesse Kotari, one of the main contributors on this study. So first, Jesse tested the responsiveness of T cells to interleukin-2. And not too surprisingly, he found that cells which express very high levels of IL-2R alpha or CD25, so the main chains for the response to interleukin-2, cells which express a very high level of this receptor were hyper-responsive. They needed a very small quantity of cytokine to get going and to phosphorylate STAT5. So that's not too surprising in the sense because more receptor yields to a higher responsiveness. More interestingly, when Jesse repeated the same measurement with interleukin-7, he found exactly the opposite. T cells that express very high level of IL-2R alpha were completely hyper-responsive to IL-7. And this is very interesting and functionally important observation because there is a switch between responsiveness to IL-7 and IL-2, which happens in T cells when they go from homeostasis to more effector differentiation. And what Jesse found, in a sense, that varied level of L2-alpha seem to correlate to this switch. And what we did is that we conjecture that because L2 and L7 signaling share the common gamma cytokine receptor, and this receptor is in limited amount, it was possible that maybe the competition for this shared common gamma chain would enable the cells based on different level of L2-alpha to control the switch between L2 and L7 responsiveness. So this is really an experimental observation which really derives from our method. We can map the variability in the level of L2-alpha into variability in the phosphorylation of STAT5 and make this interesting observation of the switch. But we didn't stop there. The next thing that we did is that we tried to build a model to really understand this quantitative relationship between L2-alpha levels and the variability of the responsiveness. And then what we did is that because we know so much about this signaling pathway, a lot of these things have been measured by other groups and by us in terms of the biophysics of interaction of the cytokines with the receptors and the way these receptors interact with each other. So we were in a good position to really build a very quantitative models of this pathway. And here, Guillaume Voisin, who is a second key contributor on this study, had to use a new framework, a new modeling framework, to be able to analyze the experimental data. If we take previous experimental measurements at face value, and we take these parameters and try to fit our observation, we completely fail. And it was very disappointing in the sense that we knew so much about this system. We felt that we could really understand the switch between L2 and L7 responsiveness just based on biophysical parameters. But what Guillaume pointed out is that all these measurements had been done on different types of cells, and maybe they had been done in vitro with different types of molecules. So we needed a little bit of flexibility in the way we use these parameters. So what Guillaume did is that he really developed a Bayesian framework which fits the data, taking the previous measurement as priors, and then we could really demonstrate that indeed it is this competition for the shared common gamma chain which enables T cells to really sharply switch on and off their responsiveness to L2 and L7 according to the variability in the L2-alpha abundance.
So you have these circulating T cells that have variable amounts of the receptor subunits in them. And the response to the cytokines IL-2 and IL-7 depends upon the abundance of those receptor subunits in the cells. What sort of significance does that have biologically to the immune response?
So this is a very important switch in differentiation for these cells. Cells which express very strongly to IL-2 tend to proliferate very efficiently. They tend to gain effector functions, and most likely they are going to maybe block certain path of differentiation. For example, there is work from Rafi Hamid's group, which demonstrated that if you sort the cells which have a high level of L2-alpha, and you adoptively transfer them into a different mouse, they will be very efficient at mounting an effector immune response against an infection. Alternatively, if you sort the cells which have a low level of L2-alpha, so in our study we find that they are more quiescent, they don't respond to L2 very efficiently, but they respond to L7 very efficiently. And what that means is that they're going to be very good at undergoing kind of an homeostatic state. They are going to be very good at not proliferating, not gaining effector function, but maybe stay in the system efficiently, committed to become memory cells, and completely correlate with our observation. So in a sense, to summarize the functional relevance of our study, what we find is that these T cells, as they differentiate, gain different level of L2-alpha, most likely based on their exposure to different antigens and to different amount of IL-2 in their past. But at a given state, for a given distribution of L2-alpha levels, they're going to split between those cells which are going to survive based on IL-7 and those cells which are going to use IL-2, and they're going to split between memory cells and effector cells. So in a sense, the system is able to generate a continuum of cells with different abundance of L2-alpha, and for this distribution, you're going to be able to split based on the amount of cytokine available in the system between different subtypes, maybe memory or effectors, or maybe TH1 or follicular helper cells, and so on and so forth. So the important aspect of our study is that we can take this snapshot of our population of T cells, point out that there is huge variability in the level of receptors, look at the variability in the signaling response that we can elicit, and really map that into different differentiation pathways.
And T cells following these various paths of differentiation are very important for the immune response.
That's right.
It wouldn't be good if they all followed the same path. You need memory cells and you need effector cells.
Exactly. That's exactly what's very striking conceptually about the system is that from a very limited pool of cells, again, you start with maybe 10 to 100 cells, you're going to expand dramatically, but you're going to be able to generate a whole slew of different subtypes. And depending on what you are fighting in terms of pathogens, you're going to be able to commit different cells to different subtypes. But you need this flexibility, you need this variability in the way the cells differentiate. It's really a critical component in the way the immune system is wired.
Understanding how protein abundance affects signaling pathways is really important. But manipulating protein abundance precisely can be very difficult, right? You can put in multiple copies of a gene encoding the protein you're interested in to try to increase the amount that's there, but it's very hard to control precisely how much of a particular protein is in a cell. And so this method that you've developed uses the variability that's inherently present in cells to study quantitative regulation of signaling, thus sort of getting around the difficulty of precisely controlling a protein abundance yourself. Can this method that you've developed be widely applied to other systems, to other cell types, to other signaling pathways?
Absolutely. That's something we are doing in the lab and we are collaborating with other labs readily. As you pointed out, no classical techniques, no, if you try to overexpress a gene or downregulate a gene with this RNA, might give you one cell types with a lower or higher level of a gene of interest. But here we can really readily get tenfold upregulation, tenfold downregulation, just by looking at the variability of cells. So in a sense, with any cell types you're going to study, if you can measure the protein abundance, if you can measure the abundance of the protein of interest at the single cell level, you are going to get this kind of continuum of phenotypes that we can anticipate based on our method. So in fact, we are applying this method in very different contexts. We are applying it by looking again at immune responses in the mouse. We are looking in more clinical setting, trying to understand the aberrant signaling for B cells in lymphoma, or we are looking at the melanomas. As soon as you can achieve the single cell resolution, as soon as you can measure at the individual cell level variability in protein abundance and measure at the same time the variability of signaling cascade, you're going to be able to make these maps which correlate different levels of signaling regulators with different responses, and then you can start to build hypotheses and you can start to understand quantitatively how the system is wired. So we really think that this methodology is really of universal application. It's not a panacea, it's just an alternative to classical methods like siRNA or upregulation of a gene, but it's something which can readily be applicable to any biological system.
Thank you, Dr. Altan Bonnet, for speaking with me.
Thank you for having me.
That was Grégoire Altan Bonnet, senior author of a paper that appears in the current issue of Science Signaling. That paper is by Kotari and colleagues, and it's titled Dissecting the Signaling of Common Gamma Chain Cytokine Family Members in T Cells with Cell-to-Cell Variability Analysis. And that wraps up this Science Signaling podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions, you can write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. This show is a production of Science Signaling and of AAAS, Advancing Science, Serving Society. I'm Annalisa VanHook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for listening.